That might get me. I'm gonna take off my shoes. Is that all right?
Sure.
I'm just gonna start undressing, and you tell me when to stop. When it's enough.
When it's uncomfortable.
Well, you are an experienced man and individual. I'm sure you've been in plenty of uncomfortable situations.
Oh, one or two. Yes, yesterday.
Yesterday. Oh, man. Are we going to elaborate on that?
It was the Arizona Bike Week.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're mentioning that. Yeah. Guys, welcome to this Juan Time. Today, my guest is Cecil Walker. I know you through the Breathing Life International and New Breed Men men's group, and you run a Instagram page, website, photography and videography for Live a Great Story. I appreciate you setting some time aside.
Busy schedule, man. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Seriously, thank you for doing it. So yesterday you were at International Bike Week, and right after this you're saying you're going to actually head up north to go buy yourself a new bike.
Yes. Yep. Right after this, we're heading up to Mesquite, Nevada.
Uh-huh.
Six-hour drive that takes me through Las Vegas and picking up a new Goldwing.
Hey, nice. Through Las Vegas. Now, are you going to make a pit stop to maybe...
Probably not.
Bet it all on black? No.
No, I'm not that lucky.
What were you doing at Bike Week?
We have a booth. I'm part of the Christian Motorcyclists Association, and I'm the president of the Mesa chapter called Desert Disciples. So we have a booth. We hand out water, rag tracks so that they can wipe their bikes down, things like that. But every year we're asked to do a message on Sunday, and that message goes out to, it's a pretty good-sized tent that's set up. It's called the Kickstand Bar. So on Sunday we take it over and, we gave a Sunday message.
Yeah. Just to invigorate the community a bit.
A little bit. And the cool part was the opening band for us was Alice Cooper School of Rock.
That's right. Some of their, esteemed players and, soon to be graduates. Yeah, that's cool, man. And any music you recognize, or is it all these new kids playing songs you don't recognize?
No, you know, I was really impressed because they learned our songs.
Yeah, right.
Right? So, you know, I know they didn't have a huge amount of time to practice, but they were really tight. It was amazing.
A testament to the school.
Yeah, I guess. And the students' talent.
Where did your love for bikes originate?
Oh, wow. 1993.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a friend that I moved back from California. I was in California for 3 years for work, moved back here, and we formed a brand new team. Mm-hmm. And I got to know this guy and we became best friends. And he had a Suzuki GS550.
Yeah.
And he said, take it down the road. I had no idea. You know, it's like, okay, what do these do? You know, so.
And I'm not too familiar with bikes. And by not too familiar, I say I know nothing. So I would assume a Suzuki is more like a sports or a speed bike, or what would you call that? Sports
bike? No, it's a good description.
Crotch rocket.
Right. It's a standard that is a little more sporty. So not quite a full sport bike, but it was pretty neat, and I was hooked.
Yeah,
just going down the road and back successfully. Not hitting anything. So, yeah, that's what got it started. And then I jumped into the deep end and got a 93 Honda CBR 600 F2. That is a sport bike.
Okay.
Lots of plastic. Not a great beginner bike, but I immediately went and got trained.
So as a beginner bike, you would want something that maybe is a little bit more stable, not as hot, not a whole lot of torque, like... What are we referring to?
Yeah, the ideal one would be one that if you fell, it isn't going to total the bike because of all the plastic damage.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
So a naked bike where you see the whole engine, there's very little things to damage.
Gotcha.
On it. This one was not that. So right away, I jumped into a Team Arizona motorcycle safety class.
Gotcha.
And it taught me the basics. It taught me all the right skills because your natural reactions are wrong.
Okay. Yeah, because you got to stay calm, right?
Yeah. You know, and there's times you want to break, and there's times breaking is a bad idea.
Oh,
so sure. You know, without knowing, you do the wrong thing.
Yeah. So that first class kind of nailed down some of these things that are common for people to hate.
Right. And I highly recommend it to anybody that's starting out because you don't have to know anything. Mm-hmm. They start with the very basics, and it's usually better that way. There's no bad habits to break. So
right. You almost have to, you know, if you've been writing for X amount of years and you're like, I'm going to finally take one of these classes. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I have to unlearn a lot of these habits.
Exactly. You know, and to jump forward in time, I liked it so much, I took their intermediate class. Mm-hmm. And then I took their advanced writer class. And then I became an instructor for them. I instructed for a few years, and I had that situation where I'm teaching an advanced writer class.
Yeah.
And this guy has been writing for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to teach me?
Yeah.
Because then I'd introduce myself and say, hey, I've only been writing 3 years or something, right?
Yeah.
And so I would always make him a bet that if you don't learn something you think is going to make you a safer writer, I'll pay for the class. And nobody did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's that good of a class.
Oh, good. That's good to know. And that there is an avenue for people out there. Because, yeah, I would say, you know, if I wanted to pick up a bike, like, where do I even start at this point, you know? So it's good to know that there are, you know, some programs that will lead you from not just beginner, but to, you know, the advanced. And that you really ran with it and you became an instructor.
It's kind of a part of my nature, I think. Whenever I get interested in something, it's like right to the deep end.
Yeah.
It's all in.
And you're providing people with like one of the ultimate forms of like freedom, right? Is the motorcycle. You get that the wind's right on you.
Just freedom.
Is that basically kind of like the main thing that kind of hooked you at first? You're like, wow, this is so freeing and exhilarating.
Yeah.
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 And so now you've been riding for 30 years?
Yeah.
What, they say that there's two types of riders, right? The people that have been in an accident.
Right.
And the people that will be in an accident.
Yes. Yeah.
What feelings do you get when you ride now that just are like, this is why I do it?
Still a little bit of that solitude, you know, you can get rid of a lot of stuff in your mind and just be focused and enjoy the scenery. But focused on the ride.
You're more in tune.
Yes. Yeah. Good description.
Yeah. So you have to be extra present. Like you can't.
Yeah, don't daydream.
You can't be here and like your phone down you know, doing your makeup. Your eyebrows look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Spent a lot of time on
it. when's the last time you instructed anybody?
Oh, God. Long time ago.
Yeah,
it's been a while. But I stay in touch with the school and the team. And they had a booth set up at Arizona Bike Week.
Oh,
and
nice.
I went by and one of the guys that was there, I've known for a long, long time. So,
yeah. Is there any close calls that you've had that?
One.
Yes, one in 30 years.
Whoa. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
You know, I've had some close calls because if you ride on the streets here, people don't look for you and they'll come over into your lane and you're there.
Yeah.
So you're always riding defensively and knowing they don't see you and they're going to do dumb things right in front of you.
Yes.
Or into you. But the one that I actually was down on a bike, I was taking a high speed training class. Mm-hmm. Which one was it? It was the Keith Code Superbike class.
Okay.
And at that time, I was riding Honda VFRs, and it's a V4 motor. Awesome bike, kind of part sporting bike and part touring.
Okay.
You know, where you can go distance.
Touring, longer periods of time.
Yeah, yeah.
More comfortable.
Right, more comfortable. Instead of just a really tight, I'm racing. Mm. You know, this one is a lot more ergonomic. So I'm at Firebird Raceway doing this class and, one of the friends of mine that was on the same bike that I was on, was telling me during one of the breaks that, yeah, see that guy over there? He's an ex-racer. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a pro.
Yeah.
Kind of retired. And he's riding this bike that, you know, on the straightaway, I blew right past him.
Dang.
And I knew my friend's on the same bike I am. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm riding the circuit, and we come around the tower turn and drop onto the drag strip, the straightaway.
Yeah.
And I see him in front of me.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder if I can pass him. And I did pretty easily because of the horsepower difference. He was on a smaller bike.
Gotcha.
Then we get to the end, and it's a left banking turn into a carousel. And I brake pretty early because I'm not a racer. Mm. You know, I'm trying to get my speed down.
Yeah.
From 140.
Damn.
So we come into that turn, and I'm in the turn looking through it like you're supposed to. There's the apron on my left.
Yep.
And then I see something on my right, just out of the corner of my eye, another motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's him.
He's taking it.
He is way faster in corners than I am. Mm-hmm. And the lighter bike, he just carried speed. And he's passing on the outside, perfectly legal. And I got distracted.
Yeah.
All I did was look over.
Oh.
And I took my eyes off the line. I came up onto the apron and down. My line's totally blown.
Yeah.
And the next thing I see is, you know, I'm dragging metal parts, trying to get through this turn.
Uh-huh.
And then I see brown. That means I'm running out of asphalt.
Yes.
I'm not going to make this turn. So I stand it up and ride off into the dirt runoff.
Yeah.
And in the distance, there's a nice concrete wall.
Oh, man.
And it's like, okay, let's try and get this stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm mainly using my rear brake because I don't want the front to wash out. And the next thing I know is the back end's coming around. It's like, how's that getting? Whoa. And it was a really gentle low side.
Uh-huh.
Slid, hopped up. Nothing, you know, other than crushed ego.
Yeah. A little bit of the pride.
Yeah. So an instructor sees this, and he almost takes out people to get over to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, yeah. He goes, by this time, I picked the bike up, just adrenaline, you know, because it's not a light bike.
Yeah.
And so I'm standing there, and he goes, will it start? Let's see. It started right up.
All right.
So it's this red bike is brown. I'm brown.
Yeah.
You
know,
because of the dust and dirt. So he goes, follow me back to the pits. Okay. So we get over there, and he's like, so what happened? Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't remember. It was gone.
Oh, shit.
So in the middle of it, everything was slow motion.
Yeah.
Oh, this is not good, you know?
Yeah.
And then when we got back over, that piece of memory was gone.
Yeah, it was just a blur.
Yeah. So he goes, oh, you don't remember coming into the turn? I said, yeah, well, I know I was in the turn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He goes, you don't remember the other bike? I go, other bike. Ooh, yeah, other bike. And it's starting to come back. He goes, yeah, you don't remember that other bike that cut you off and sucked you into the corner faster than you wanted to go? That doesn't sound right. And then it started filling back in. I said, no. He was totally outside my turn.
Yeah.
Passing me on the outside, perfectly legal. And when he came back over, nowhere near me. So it was, they were blaming him as the ex-racer. So I
knowing
patched
some of those
it
tactics,
together. Yeah. I patched it together enough to know, no, it was me. Mm. I blew it with my taking my eyes off.
Normally, what they were saying that he came in like a little too tight on you, and does that create, is that more of like a, whoa, I got to watch out? Or does that also create like
the drafting.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it could be a lot of factors that mess up the next rider, especially if they're not a racer.
Yes.
Right? Not used to it. But, yeah, it was all my fault.
Man, what were you equipped with? Like, were you in like in full garb to be able to take?
Yeah, for those classes, you have to be. Gotcha. I wasn't wearing full leathers, but the kind of composite stuff that I was wearing had elbow cups and padding and, you know, everywhere, all the impact zones and stuff. Yeah. So it worked out fine.
Heck yeah. And how long ago was this?
Probably 1997.
Oh, okay. So at this point you're under 5 years in.
Yeah.
And a lot younger too.
I was a little younger.
Withstand some of the fallout of taking a tumble. You were taking this turn at 140.
No,
you're slowing down. Yeah, right? You were at 140 slowing down. I'm gonna say you're going in. Listen, I don't know how to describe that. I've never experienced anything like that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can tell that's, you know, a rush, obviously. Yeah,
definitely a rush.
Man, but other than people kind of coming into your lane on you know, the highways or the freeways here, you've managed to avoid it. Yeah. That's testament to maybe the classes that you instructed, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what started me on that journey.
Do you think you learned more from taking all three classes or the time where you were instructing? What do you think you learned
a little
more?
Both. The first three were fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, and they build on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely those. Instructing takes it to another level.
It does, right?
Because you have to demonstrate what you want them to do perfectly.
And each person receives the information differently right? So you have to find out how this person, how you have to describe it to them, right?
Yeah, you do corrective, you know, each person's different, like you said.
Yeah. Man, that's super interesting. So why are bike guys, and you're going to speak for everybody because you're their ambassador, okay? Well, why do some... and I say because you said it, right? You're like, oh yeah, I'm switching from Harley to Honda. Why is that a big thing where like somebody's like, now I'm like, you know, like switching. And I think it's people are like that with cars in general, right? Mm-hmm. It's like Ford versus Chevy and Dodge, but I think it's at another level with motorcycles. And I guess I want to say is because you do have to be extra present. You have to be really intimate with this vehicle because you're exposed, right?
Right.
But What do you think you can attest to the slight tribalism?
Oh, there's nothing slight about it. When I went from Honda to the Harley, you're joining a whole different family.
Mm-hmm,
you know, it's a culture.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going from I think my latest bike was a 2006 Honda VFR, and I went to a 2014 Harley Breakout. So this is kind of, I was describing the naked bike that doesn't have a lot of plastic.
Yes.
No plastic whatsoever on this thing. No fairing, no windshield. But it was comfortable as a sport bike rider because everything felt better. Like the handlebars were flat and you reached out to them. And so it was a nice transition, but you're also taking a giant step backwards in technology.
Gotcha.
The Hondas, Suzukis, Kawasakis, all of those kind of bikes, like state of the art.
Yeah, it's like loaded.
What they were racing on the racetracks, they're selling in the dealerships.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they advanced the technology so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hop on a Harley, and it's older technology for a reason, because part of it is the allure. The sound is patented. You know, that Harley sound is patented. So it was a whole different vibe. And you know, it's funny because now I've got a 2012 CVO Road Glide, so it's a custom vehicle operation, kind of a rare bike.
Okay.
And I'm switching to this Honda Goldwing, which, you know, totally different. And part of the reason in doing that is I want to ride some really long distance rides and way more comfortable. But I'm kind of checking my ego again, because when I ride the Harley, it's bad, you know, and I feel like I'm bad, you know.
Oh, gotcha. Yes.
And I'm not, you know. So, This will fit my personality a little
bit. Gotcha. Better. Okay. Yes. Because you say, yeah, I ride bikes, and you say, I got a Harley. Then people in people's minds, that paints a certain picture.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get that for sure. Oh man, if I had time, I would definitely ride up there with you. And then, you know, you'd abandon your truck up there and we'd have a very intimate ride on the way back.
No.
Cecil, so I came to know you through the men's group, right. And we had talked a little bit about Live a Great Story.
Yeah.
And just had this conversation yesterday with one of my coworkers at Game Show Bad Rooms of all places. And we were kind of talking about, you know, my podcast and how this kind of plays out. And, you know, some people have mentioned, like, are you, you know, do you do research? You should come with these questions. And I get it. I do. But I like the allure of I'm getting to know my, you know, guest,
right,
as the audience does. And it plays out like a natural conversation. Sure. So what is Live a Great Story?
Yeah, no, I'd love to talk about it. You know, I came across this on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, that was kind of my mental motto. I like to encourage people, mm-hmm, to try new things,
yeah,
meet new people.
Yes.
Just expand it, right? And then I found that through that, I was hearing some great stories,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. And I'm able to share some great stories, I think. And then I came across this, and it was done, put together by a guy named Zach, and he goes by Z whenever he's informally talking, but he started this, and it just resonated. I loved it. It's like, oh, I go camping with my Subaru Crosstrek,
yeah,
and back in there, and these people I'm camping with are kind of hardcore, you know, they've modified their vehicles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And everywhere I ended up going, whether there or scuba diving or whatever, I'm running into people who have these great stories. So
yeah,
I started buying some things like this flag here that goes on the back of my car.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation starter, yeah, really is what it is.
Yes.
Right. So, Zach started this and it's just exploded. And at a point in time, he put an invitation out. Hey, submit an application, mm-hmm, if you would like to be considered as an ambassador, mm-hmm, for mm-hmm the message here. And
yeah,
I did and got accepted. So, you know, I usually carry stickers around with me.
Yeah.
And when I hear a great story, just impromptu, you know, it's like, man, that is really a great story.
Yeah.
Let me give you something.
So
these are the small ones.
Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And so what you do is get people to tell great stories. So those are for you.
Oh, I love it. I'll have to share this. We gotta pass it along. I know I did get one from you the first time we met. Yeah.
Yeah. These are probably a little smaller.
Yes.
And easier to put on a tablet, phone, whatever.
Yes. Oh, and on the back, it says, be the hero of your story. That's true, man. There is a hero and a villain in each one of our stories. And a lot of times we are both.
Yeah, right? Yes. Well, yeah, I like to tell people that on Earth here, we get to be an example. Mm-hmm. You're going to be an example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, you're going to choose to be a good example or a bad example.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's those two wolves inside of us, and the one that grows is one you feed.
That is true. That is true. And acknowledging that there are those two, and that there's two sides of each one, two main sides and a lot of intricacies, because we are not just black and white.
Absolutely.
There's layers.
There's
layers.
Beauty in the gray.
There's so much beauty in the gray and the nuances of people. And, you know, I don't like that if you tell me one thing about you, you know, if someone shares something in ideology, then I can assume the rest of, you know, where you fall. No, I want to be, you know, take taken aback by like your ideas and philosophies and like, well, hold on, how are you bridging these two, which I initially would have thought are not connected.
Right.
And I think the individuals and their perspectives and the stories that they lived, you know, play into all of that.
Yeah. You're right there.
where's the, I guess I would imagine that this takes you, this allows you to travel the world in a sense. Or is that something you do on your own?
I do on my own, right? Yeah. And what has taken me all over the world, first was my job.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've retired last August.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, I was going to retire next month, May.
Yeah.
And they made it very lucrative to go away then. So it was like, well, yes, I will.
You know what? I was thinking, yes.
Yes, I will. Yeah, so it switched to scuba diving. And really, that story parallels the motorcycle.
Okay.
I started diving. I got open water certified, went into the next levels, you know, advanced diver, and eventually rescue diver.
Wow.
And it's not rescue to go find people. It's what, you know, you're diving and you have an issue. How do I help you out of that?
Gotcha.
So it just takes your training to a whole nother level and makes you a safer diver, right?
I don't think there's anything scarier than being underwater and you're running out of oxygen.
That's a bad thing.
I can't imagine a more terrifying scenario for myself. I've never done it. Yeah. I bought a snorkel like a couple years ago and I used it a couple times, you know, in a pool. And I'm just like, this is weird. Like it goes against what my body wants to do, you know, or it's like, this does not feel right.
Right.
And, scuba diving, skydiving, all things like I really hold high up here on my bucket list where I gotta do. But being able to rescue, I just saw a headline. And some guy had fallen into the ocean off of his boat. Something had happened. And Leonardo DiCaprio, the actor, happened to be in the area and rescues the guy. So it's like, imagine you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Rescue.
You're like, I guess this is it. And next thing you know, Leonardo DiCaprio shows up and saves your life.
Wow.
Crazy. But what... I read another story where a guy got rescued, I think, 2 times. From a scenario like that, where he worked on a boat and it went down, and he ended up becoming a rescue diver,
right?
Because it's like, okay, man, I've been rescued twice, like let's go. I guess this, I need to pay it forward and pay it back, right?
Yeah.
What's maybe a really difficult situation that you had found yourself in while diving?
Oh, when I started diving, there were 3 things I was afraid of.
Yeah.
One was sharks.
Yes, of course.
If I never saw a shark, I would be the happiest diver ever. The other one was diving at night. You're asking me to jump into inky black water.
Yes. Yeah.
And then...
it's just, there's anything and everything within... Because what's the range that you're light? Could see
the like light. Yeah, it's all about the light, you know, because you can't see any distance at all,
right? Yes,
so wherever your light is shining is what you see. You can't see what's next to you,
which right,
because you're not shining light. But it's better than you think, because there's all kinds of critters that only come out at night. You know, you're typically not diving very deep. You're just looking for the animals that don't come out during the day.
Yeah.
But, and then the third one was diving in kelp. I was always terrified of entanglement.
Yes.
You know, just getting wrapped up. But I ended up loving all 3.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's a way to push past your fears.
Yeah. Yeah. And conquer that. There's, yeah, and the more you do it, so you get in the water the first time when it's dark, and you're like, this is terrifying. You get out, and you're like, hey, that was all right. And the next time, it's less and less.
Right.
That the fear is present, because not that the fear goes away. It's just you become more comfortable with that feeling, and you become confident in your training and all that. What was it? What was the thought when you saw your first shark then?
It was intentional, actually.
Okay.
It was my first international dive trip. We went to Fiji.
Okay.
So right away, I've set the bar super high.
Yeah.
I mean, the diving there is phenomenal. And we were diving all kinds of different stuff. And then about the fourth day, they had a sign-up sheet. Would you like to do a shark dive?
Ooh, okay.
And I'm like, no.
No, right.
But all my friends were. And I knew if I didn't do this,
gotcha,
I'm going to be coming back hearing all their stories of how cool this was.
The FOMO, fear of missing out. So your mom saying, Cecil, if your friends jumped off a cliff, would you do it?
Yes, I would. Yes. I'm that guy. So I signed up, and unfortunately, I had enough time between signing up to diving to look them up, to do some research.
Of what sharks to expect?
Yeah, because they knew what sharks were going to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I looked it up and I said, you know, I'm thinking, at least it's not great white sharks.
Mm-hmm.
No, they were worse. There are worse sharks.
Bull sharks?
Bull sharks.
Yeah.
Yes, more human attacks by bull sharks than
I think white. They're responsible for the Jaws movie series, the story.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they're one of the few sharks that can also swim up fresh water.
Yes, I think that's why. Yeah.
That's why. And their visibility drops. They get that sensation of electrical patterns and stuff, and they'll do a test bite.
Oh, my God, dude, I'm getting chills.
Yeah, yeah, a test bite can do some serious damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, ooh, I don't like the taste.
It's not like a licking a Tootsie Pop. No, it's right.
Yeah.
Whoa, man. And sharks don't need a lot of water. Like a 2.5 feet, 3 feet.
Right.
You know, that's all you need, right?
Yeah.
So you prepared yourself for a bull shark?
I sort of prepared myself as good as I could, but I'd already been diving and taking a camera down with me that could shoot photos and video.
Okay.
So it was a pretty good size rig because I'd been doing photography for so many years before that.
Yeah.
It was a natural thing. If I'm going underwater, I want to capture it, right? I want to share it with other people.
Yeah.
So they briefed us on the boat that if you have a pretty good sized camera rig, don't be surprised if one of the dive master leads that are residents of Fiji, if they don't swim over to you and go, you know, come on. And if you want to, you can leave your safe row of people.
Little haven.
Follow them out, and you're the closest object to the sharks other than the guy feeding them.
Yeah.
Who's in chainmail.
Dude, what a job.
Yeah, yeah. So there were three of us that got invited out. All three of us went out. And I was a little bit nervous. And your head's on a swivel. Because they're everywhere and coming from all different directions. But then it just faded. It just, you're concentrating on how beautiful these animals are.
I'm moving.
Yeah, just swimming by you. And then I just started thinking photography, videography, and I'm framing the shots. And and when they tap the tanks to say it's time to turn around and head back, that's when I knew I'd overcome it. Because I never looked back to see if a shark was following me.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Wow. What a feeling, man. What a feeling. Yeah. I'm just taking that all that in, man. That's a lot to unpack there. That's epic, man.
It was way before I got into this, or these flags would have been flying.
Yeah, I don't know if you see any red flags, Cecil. You might be colorblind.
I do like to try new things.
Yeah,
And most of them have an element of risk. You know, risk reward.
Well, it makes you feel alive afterwards too, you know? It's like there's no greater feeling than that where you test it. Like, that's just, you have to be okay with being uncomfortable for a moment and allowing yourself to just gain some confidence in those moments.
Right.
You'll be way better off. You can tell, that makes sense why you're really calm, level-headed. You got a warm smile. You smile with your eyes, you know, it's some of us don't. We're just like, So with scuba diving, did you already kind of have the intention that you were also going to photograph a lot of those, you know, moments?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was kind of warned. When I first started, I was probably only an advanced diver, but still only maybe 3 or 4 months into diving. And I was diving as much as I could.
Oh, wow. Wait, and wait, where are you living at this time?
Here. Yeah, where do you dive here in the desert? I know where you're going.
Yeah, no, there's a couple places, right? There's one on Broadway.
Well, it's not even in pools here. You do the pools for training.
Gotcha.
Stuff, but you use the lakes, and especially like Lake Pleasant. We would go out there and dive. Winter diving is cold, but way better visibility because the algae's not blooming.
Gotcha.
So we would go there quite a bit. Went up to Mojave Lake up by Kingman.
Okay.
And at that time, they had a problem with a certain kind of mollusk that was eating all the algae.
Oh, okay.
And that meant the fish population dropped, but it meant it's very clear diving. So for the diver side, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because there's a place called Cabin Site, a little cove, and they purposely sunk a school bus and a van and a few other things to play with a couple boats. It's a great place to dive because it's just so fun.
Yeah.
But did all that and then started doing things like Channel Island, driving over to California and diving. That's where the kelp forests were. And
yeah,
beautiful stuff to look at, but really cold water.
Cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. How far north of LA, I guess, is that?
Right off, like Long Beach.
Okay.
You know, Anacapa, Santa Rosa, fun diving.
Yeah. So lots of lakes out here in Arizona to do diving in.
Yeah.
Right. What's the deepest that you've gone in Arizona, I guess?
Oh, Arizona, you can go deep.
Yeah.
We are limited to 130 feet as a recreational diver.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's what we're trained for, our equipment.
Yeah.
All of our calculation tables.
Any lower than that, what happens?
You run risks that I'm not willing to push the boundary on. But you can dive much deeper.
Yeah.
But you need that training and you need different equipment. And usually those are called technical divers. Mm-hmm. And I've got good friends that are just hooked with this. They're consumed.
Yeah.
They jetted right past normal diving.
Yeah, yeah.
And truly went into the deep end. And even at Lake Pleasant, they'll dive the old Waddell Dam. So the old dam is still there. It's just underwater.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that's deeper than I can go. Uh-huh. But these guys do it all the time with rebreathers or different air mixes, you know, exotic blends and stuff. Yeah, so a whole different genre of people.
Yeah, seriously. Do you know any free divers?
I don't. I've watched a few documentaries. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Never going to try this.
No, I mean, that's one thing where it's like, dude, come on. It's a whole nother world, man. And then the threat of if you come up too early or too soon, too quickly.
Free diving doesn't have that because you're only using the air that was in your lungs when you started. So it's never going to expand beyond what you started out with. The danger is when you're scuba diving and you have that compressed air tank.
Oh, gotcha.
When you dive down, everything compresses. And if you were to take a breath of compressed air and then held that breath and started ascending, you can blow your lungs out.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, kind of bad. You know, you can get a embolism in your lungs. There's a lot of things. So we dive with dive computers or dive tables and stuff. But most people use computers now. Uh-huh. And it warns you. You're going too fast. It tracks your entire dive.
Oh, wow.
So you can analyze it later.
Yeah, there's some fail safes there.
Yeah,
in place.
Yeah. And you're always diving with a buddy. So that's you were talking about running out of air. They need to be close enough for you to swim over to and go,
yeah, and then let's go.
Yes, yeah. And then you share. Because we have a second octopus,
That
they call it, another regulator, and you just hand it to them. Both of you are breathing off of yours now. So the dive's over.
Got It's just to get up and out. How long is that cable?
Cord?
Get that cord, yeah.
We would be too far away.
Oh, gotcha.
So usually you would be close enough to grab the person, like by their strap. And then you can do a controlled descent.
And so how do you do that underwater? You'd have to blow everything out first and then...
No. It's you just put this thing in your mouth and you breathe. So it's like...
I figure you open your mouth under there, there's water going to come in, right?
Yeah, no, your lips are sealed around it. And it's got a valve on it. So as you breathe in, the air comes from the tank. And then when you breathe out, that valve shuts. The air is not coming from the tank. It escapes out the front of, or the sides of the regulator.
I gotcha. What's the most exotic animal you've seen while diving?
I love octopus.
Yeah.
I love to see them. Yes. That's my favorite thing. But probably the most exotic was a mola mola.
What's
it? It's called a sunfish.
Oh, yes.
But they're really huge.
Yeah.
Really huge.
Aren't they like super ugly as well?
Super ugly. We were diving in California and we were on an ascent and I was below the person I was diving with, my dive buddy. He never saw it.
Oh.
So as we're coming up, I happened to look down and it was kind of coming up behind us.
Oh, okay.
You know, just doing its thing. And it was so cool to see. That's the first one I ever saw.
Don't they think the sunfish might have been responsible for the Loch Ness Monster legend?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah. ever seen any like squid?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Bonaire, we saw some squid and cuttlefish kind of stuff, and I love Bonaire. That's one of my favorite dive places.
And where is that?
It's off the coast of Venezuela. So there's three islands. The other ones are probably more famous. Aruba.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Curacao and Bonaire. ABC Islands.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Man. So cool, man. Biking. You operate drones. Like, do you have like a whole business angle with your nope. the drone applications? No. That's just for personal recreation.
Personal, and I love to volunteer and do stuff, right? You know, help groups out like New Breed and stuff. So, I was a motorsports racetrack photographer for a few years.
Gotcha.
And kind of honed my skills with motion there. Okay. And kind of after that, you know, I had a day job, and most of the people either that were racing cars or motorcycles or whatever didn't really realize I had a day job, right?
Yes.
When can I have my photos, you know? And so over time, I stopped shooting it and switched more to event photography and just donating it, you know?
Gotcha.
What I don't shoot is weddings. That's a whole different skill set.
As far as like dealing with the people?
Absolutely. Yes. The mother.
Yeah. How many did it take before you were like, okay, check please?
No, you know, I never did.
Oh, okay.
Except for relatives. So I did shoot some family weddings and stuff like that. But it's like, if I shoot this, this is my gift to you.
Yes.
I'm not, you know, I'll do post-processing type stuff, but it's yours.
Yeah.
I'm giving you this disc with all the images on it, you know.
Yeah, the night captured, you know.
Yeah.
So what's the differences that you had to really hone in, the skills and the eye, I guess, when you're dealing with a moment in motion that you're trying to capture?
Well, you just hit it. You know, what are you trying to capture? Like a race car or a motorcycle on a racetrack, and as it's coming around a corner, you're trying to get that lean if it's a biker. But the worst thing that you can do is it's you kind of see a three-quarter angle shot of it.
Yeah.
The wheels are standing still. You shot with such a high shutter speed that it's brilliantly crisp.
Yeah.
You have no sense of motion.
Gotcha.
They could be parked in a, well, they could be standing out there
at that
right?
point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess one of the things I concentrated on was using really slow shutter speeds and still having the object crisp.
Yeah.
And the wheels blurred and the background blurred.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without doing that in post-processing, because you can do that after, but you usually tell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
What's a dead giveaway?
You know, anything that looks Photoshopped, it's usually the pixels on the edge.
The edges, right, yeah.
Don't match, mm-hmm. you know, or it's abruptly different.
Dang, man. How long did it take you to try and nail like that, like where... You know, the image, the main thing is crisp, but the tires are there. Like, do you recall how long that kind of took? And were you finally like, yes, I got it.
Yes, that's what I'm trying. No, well, you know, I didn't do it intentionally.
Yeah.
It just kind of came out of shooting.
Yes.
And then I found that combination and I went, oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. What was I doing? And you go back and look at the stats on the photo. Then I started intentionally doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. See, I had my first like actual photo shoot this last Monday for some headshots and whatnot. And he's a dance photographer. Mm. So he was talking about, you know, like that's one of his main passions is capturing dancers.
Right.
And I was like, oh yeah. Cause he was mentioning shutter speeds or, you know, where you take like a blast, a burst. Right?
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, is that what you do for the dancer? He's like, oh no. He's all, that's one intentional shot. I wait for the right moment and click it. And I was like, oh, I guess that does make sense.
Yeah.
And then he had mentioned that dancers were very particular about their hands and that's when you'll reshoot. Most of the shots is oh, I don't like my hand positioning, my placement, where it was. Mm-hmm. It was too flex, too hard. And my girlfriend, Sheila, which you mentioned, she danced a lot. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's all about hands. So she brought up examples where, like, look at how powerful the pose is, the body, the legs. But look at the hands and look at the stoic. The face just says, I'm here. I'm not struggling to do this powerful pose. But the hands are nice and soft and the face is just stoic. And I'm like, boom, new appreciation.
Right. Art in motion.
Yeah. Seriously. Capturing that at the right moment.
Yeah.
What, so you got into, was photography one of your main passions and interests before like motorcycles and scuba diving? Yeah. What was the first, I guess, what smartphone set it all off for you?
Wow.
What were you using? What was the first camera you ever had?
Way before smartphone.
Yeah.
It was back in the 35 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a couple of SLRs that had interchangeable lenses. And I took a class at Phoenix College and, you know, that kind of really got me hooked too. You know, it just kind of blossomed after that.
Did you take it as far as like having the whole room, the red room?
Yeah. It was black and white. Yeah. And it was the dark room and doing the developing. And you know, now a lot of people will say, hey, you've altered the photo after you took it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's cheating. Well, yeah, ideally you capture exactly what you wanted in the camera.
Yes.
But, even in the days of the darkroom, you could alter the photo,
burn
and dodge it, you know, so you're changing the light balance.
Yeah. Make the dark sharper.
And you can crop. Like you took this big a picture, but really that's all you want to focus on. Same thing.
Yeah. Just more, you know, not automated, not digitally doing it.
You don't just press a button. Oh, so much better. Auto.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, making something efficient and easier and more accessible is awesome. Yeah. There's a ton of upside to that. The older I get, the more I appreciate the intention and the process of the old style of things, you know, like, you know, got rid of, or we haven't used, you know, the Nespresso machine. Or like a standard coffee pot, like now I got the pour over drip, like letting that kind of go and just hey, I'm here, I'm making coffee, I'm pouring it over.
Right.
This is what I'm doing right now. I'm using that moment here to meditate, or I use it a lot because I'm learning French right now for no other reason than my daughter said she wanted to learn French.
There you go.
So I was like, I'm gonna start it with you. And now she just kind of dropped it. And I'm like, well, I'm learning French for the next who knows how long. Right, right. But I do like that. Like, so like the whole idea of having like the red room or the dark room, mm-hmm. right? And going through that process. But obviously that is super time consuming because yeah. you have to have what, at least three baths?
Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have to, there's a ton of chemicals.
That's the problem.
Yes.
You know, chemicals and getting room dark enough.
Mm.
And yeah, but it's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, just to feel something develop. And it was a white piece of paper when you started.
God, so true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a blank canvas.
Blank canvas. That's about as close to art as I get, right? So photos.
Man, I dude, like to, yes, everybody has a camera, you know, in their pocket these days, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you can take a photo of anything and yeah. cool, you captured it, but mm-hmm. it does take skill and an eye and, you know, the perfect angle and contrast within the, you know, the scene you're trying to capture. Like
right.
that's, there's art in everything, and it's cheesy to say, but it is, it's true. Mm-hmm. It's everything, you know, on how you choose to, you know, select a bike, how you choose to ride your bike and drive it and all of that, you know, how you put on your wetsuit. I don't, there's art everywhere. If you want to appreciate, you know, life.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's cultures even that celebrate the simplicity of pouring some tea.
Yes.
You know, and take it to a whole art form.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's true. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to like really dive into, you know, what you have in front of you, right? Instead of always like, I wish I had this because this would be so much easier. No. Hey, just fall in love with what you have and the processes that are at your fingertips and sure. You know, appreciate that. Really, really be present in that. And I'm speaking to myself, all right? And yeah, definitely strive for, you know, to make it easier and, you know, where you can expedite something. Cause we all got to get to some, you know, the next thing, right. You know, you got to get to your bike and come back. what's the first drive that you have in mind for that bike?
Oh, I want to take it, to Oregon and visit some guys that I worked with in the last team I was in before I left. I was part of a cybersecurity response team when things go really, you know, wonky.
Yeah.
I love these guys, but I never got to meet them face to face.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's one of the things I want to do is just go.
How long have you guys not known each other?
It was probably 2-3 years, something like that.
It's a long time.
Yeah. A great group. One of my favorite teams that I've worked with.
Mm-hmm. And do they ride or?
Some do.
Okay.
Some do.
So you'll
make
it.
Fun of me on my gold wing.
Oh yeah, they're gonna say you went that route. You went to the dark side.
Yeah.
So you'll ride there. What's the trip looking like? I mean, are you just beelining it straight there, or are you
sort of? You know, I stop and see some things along the way, mm-hmm. But it'll probably be solo.
Yeah.
You know? I've got a friend that loves to ride, and we'll probably do some rides like, you know, we went to Yosemite.
Okay.
And gorgeous ride, especially on a motorcycle. Wow. We spent a few days like in Kernville, never even heard of this place. Awesome little community. We hit some breweries and checked that out, and that was fascinating. So I do like to stop along the way and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Not just.
What are you planning for the drive up there as far as like time wise? Like a couple days?
Doesn't matter.
I love it. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. Like, what are you just going along? That reminds me
kind of wing it. Yeah.
You know, my parents did that back in the day. And I was like, I look at it now. I was like, how did you guys even just like do this? Because, you know, fuck, I can't do this shit these days. My mom was in this like big empowerment week long, like camp, in Reno. Mm-hmm. So we went, my dad just, we just hung out basically at casinos, you know, while my mom was there, and we were in the arcades and stuff. And then my mom graduated and we were headed back down, and they're like, hey, why don't we go to Tahoe? We're like, right here. So we went to Tahoe, went on a boat, little boat ride. That was cool. Beautiful. Went down and they're like, hey, we're near Yosemite. Let's go check it out. Mm. Cool. Went through Yosemite, watched that, loved it, saw a bear. And then they're like, we're probably not ever going to get this opportunity again. Let's go see the Golden Gate Bridge. We went all the way up to, you know, San Francisco, and then went down, you know, the PCH, and then saw the ocean for the first time, went to La Jolla, saw the seals. And I'm just like, dude, this week long thing turned into like almost 3 weeks. And I'm just like, how did you guys manage? You know, you guys are my age doing that now. I'm just like, whoa, but it's I was grateful for that experience. Very, very fond, because I love to look at maps and atlases and all that. So like, what an adventure for me. You know, that was what, 10, I think 10 or 11 or so. And my sister chose not to go, and she really missed out. But me, my brother, my mom, my dad, and that was awesome. So like, for you to just say, my intention is to get to Oregon, but we'll just see.
Yeah.
We'll see how long it takes.
Yeah. Where the road leads.
Yeah, seriously. So you mentioned cybersecurity. So was that the bulk of your career, was doing cybersecurity stuff?
No, probably the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But before that, it was all IT.
Okay.
You know, IT support, whether writing software or supporting software developers.
Mm-hmm. So you can code and all that?
Like, I used to. Nobody would want me to code now. I wasn't that good then.
I got you. Do you work more with like the systems on how people maybe interfaced with them a little bit more? Yeah. Because you're more the story of, of something like, okay, we need to be able to reach this client, this customer. This,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Nailed it.
I'm done.
But now you're since retired and taking your story to another level. Eh?
Yeah.
You're doing that. That's
hopefully my wife's still here.
Okay.
Or not.
He's like, I'm ringing too.
I think it rings like maybe 3 times and then it stops.
And you got an old school answer machine. Is it you and your wife going back and forth?
Yeah. We actually have a landline.
Yeah, idea. And you guys go back and forth. Hey guys, it's the Walkers. You missed us. We're out living a great story. No.
Yes. More for like just call filtering.
Where you yes.
Oh, that's clearly spam. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, 99% of our phone calls these days, right? I guess what's on the horizon right now for you? Is like any new ventures, like or anything I need to know that you didn't touch on? Man, well, motorcycles, race photographers, scuba diving.
No, you know, it's funny because you do know the answer to that. When I retired, one of the things I kind of set was I want to keep my brain active. Mm-hmm. I want to learn new things, right? So I may have come down and paid you a visit and bought some electronic drum kit from
that's
you.
That's right.
So I don't do music. You know, I can barely play a radio.
Yeah.
And so this is a new journey, and it's definitely, it's fun.
Okay.
I got a long ways to go, but, you know, just learning new stuff and new patterns and starting to read the music.
Okay.
It's helping the old noodle.
Yeah, you have to do that. You do have, like, that's when people deteriorate, is where you're not learning anything new, you're not challenging yourself, you're not solving puzzles. Like, this brain is equipped to find problems where they don't exist. They'll make up problems if there's nothing there. Like, that's just what we do, right? So, you got this new tool in front of you. How's it been working out?
I love it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great kit.
Why drums?
Yeah, that's a great question. I dabbled with guitar and keyboards and stuff some time ago. It just never really clicked.
Gotcha.
And then at church, I was part of a production team for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was roam camera. So I had a camera that was portable, tethered, and the bulk of what I was shooting was the drummer during worship.
Gotcha. And you not knowing that that's what you were doing, but then you realize, okay, I'm really focused on the drummer.
Yeah, yeah. And just it blew me away. How can they be doing all of that at the same time? Four limbs moving in different directions.
Yep.
And I just knew there's no way in the world I could ever do that.
You know what? I think too, your love for capturing a moment in motion, mm-hmm. who's the most mm-hmm. person that's moving on the stage.
Right.
You know, it's the drummer because they have to do this versus everybody else can kind of be here. Yeah, they move around a little bit, but you know, to play the song, they have to be moving.
Yes, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and we had a great director he's sitting in the back. He can see all four or five cameras and just had a great eye. Mm-hmm. He would say, okay, try this. And just you moving and them moving and getting it just right where it kind of breaks where you see the drumsticks hitting it, and then you can see the guitarist, the lead guitar, in the background.
Yeah.
And then you either like start with them and pull back mm-hmm. and expose the drums mm-hmm. or the other way around, or just some motion.
Yeah.
Great eyes. He taught me a lot.
Nice.
The kind of how to capture it.
Yeah. Shout out to your director.
Yeah.
And Eric. It's primal too. Eric. Did you say Herrick with an H?
No, Eric.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Shout out Eric, man. We appreciate people that teach us,
yes.
you know, new perspectives in that sense. But yeah, drums was my first instrument.
Okay.
Very, very primal. I mean, is that every culture's first instrument?
Probably.
Is something to hit, right? It has to be, right? Yeah, my first instrument until I found out how expensive it was to get everything rehead and replacement cymbals and all that. Yeah, I was in high school. I was like, no, I guess I'm picking up the bass I've mm-hmm. had back behind my drum set for 2 years.
Yeah,
that's where it started for
probably
sure.
Pre-electronic.
They were out for sure, but yeah,
good.
No. Unless you were going to spend like $5,000, which again, you can't. Yeah. No, they had some good stuff in the 80s. You know, because everything was electronic at that point, you know, 909.
True.
Yeah. So what are your, do you have any drummers that you kind of look up to or you might not know the drummers, but maybe the bands that they're in?
Well, there's always the classics, mm-hmm. you know, John Bonham and Neil Peart. And,
yeah.
Those guys are just fascinating to watch, but then I'll go to some local shows.
Yeah.
And who am I looking at? You know, I'm looking at the drummer and stuff.
Yes.
And a friend of mine and I just came back from Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm.
So we drove up there just to see the White Buffalo.
Oh, shoot.
For the second year.
Yeah.
So band most people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever seen Sons of Anarchy, the motorcycle show, right?
Yeah.
A lot of their music is in it. And that's where I first heard them. Very unique voice, three-piece band.
Yeah.
Again, another, why is it three-piece bands are the ones you remember? You know,
right.
It's like ZZ Top and Rush and so forth.
Yeah.
These guys he has a very small drum kit.
Yes.
And the guitarist, he's playing keyboards, he'll play bass, he'll play guitar, and then the lead singer, and he can play guitar. And so just love their music. And the drummer is known as the Machine.
Okay.
And he is phenomenal.
Yeah.
He is a madman, just a controlled madman, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not a lot of body movement.
Yeah.
But man, is he attacking the drums. And so much sound out of a really small kit.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got that finesse.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
So good.
Yeah, no, guys that can make, you know, a small drum kit, you know, just fill up so much space and mm-hmm. have, you know, a lot of dynamic to mm-hmm. it, you know, that's real skill there, man.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you can get a drum kit with, you know, a 9-piece drum set right. and you got 12 cymbals, you got all these things going for you, which is great. Yeah, but someone that can, you can strip it down, but still make it sound full.
Exactly.
Yeah, more appreciation for that too.
Yeah, so we drive up every year.
So when's the band starting, man?
I'll find a geriatric band.
I'm sure you'll come up with a badass name too for it, man. Yeah. Well, best of luck in that endeavor.
Thank you.
The drums. Just keep it fun.
Absolutely.
In this day and age of like, you know, Instagram and social media where you see everybody just absolutely killing it and, you know, making crazy money and having all these followers from it, people forget that they can do something just because it's fun.
Yeah.
Just because I like this to occupy my time. You know, you don't have to, you know, obviously I was like, when's the band? You know, when are you doing this? I'm just not, man. I'm just, you know, I'm doing this for fun.
Right.
And I get a lot of joy, peace, and rejuvenation out of it, man. Yeah, you need that. You
satisfaction.
Need those outlets. Yes. Satisfaction, challenging yourself. Yeah. Oh, so much upside.
Right.
So much upside. And, any parting words you want to give to these fine folks of unlimited wisdom up in that cranium? He's keeping it nice and tight.
Kind of just staying with this theme, you know, like you said, get out there, live a great story.
Yeah.
You know, and, inspire others. You know, it doesn't cost anything.
It doesn't.
No.
Yeah. It really doesn't. That's beautiful, man. Well, we'll wrap this up so you can get up to Nevada and get your bike.
Six hour drive.
You're not riding it back, right? You've got the trailer.
Yeah.
Is that just going to be like, you're just staring at it in the rearview mirror? Like, oh, I wish I was riding that. I wish I was riding that.
And it's an enclosed trailer, so I can't even see it. So.
Oh man. But hold on. Are you going to test drive it up there? You have to, right?
They have a test track.
Okay. You're going to take that turn at 100?
Oh, well, it's fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang. What if you come across, you know, an area on the way back and you're like, I got to get down and ride this a little bit right now.
Just unload it.
Yeah. Just unload it.
Look at those curves.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
My man loves his curves. If you learn one thing tonight, Cecil loves his curves. Dude, I appreciate you coming on, sharing that.
Thank you.
I knew you were an interesting individual, and I hope to see you next week, next weekend, you know, at least just day, and you know, just see you do your thing up there for the group as well.
Very cool. Thank you.
So, all right, man. Well, guys, what's your social media handle so people know where to follow you?
On Instagram, it's Scoobrew. Scoobrew. And that's what my car's name is.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Combination of scuba and Subarus are called Roos.
Ah, Scoobrew. Okay. So. Subarus are great cars, man.
It goes anywhere.
All right. Scoobrew. Cecil, again, thank you, man. Nothing but love for you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming on, guys. Until next time, live a great story.